All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Theology on Tuesdays. We're so glad that you are here. If this is your first time, my name is Justin. This is my good friend, Brian. And this little sheet of paper you'll see kind of spread around the room. And it's really important because the way the night goes is we'll spend the next 25, 30 minutes talking about some topic. We've been looking at friendship. We're going to explore more about this topic of friendship tonight. And at any point in this evening, you can ask a question about either what we talk about or really anything whatsoever. You can scan that top QR code and submit it at any point. And then Abigail is going to be moderating. There she is. I was like, you're not Abigail. All right. She's going to be moderating the questions tonight. And you can also join our email list down here on the bottom left by just scanning that QR code. And that way you can kind of know when we meet and that sort of thing. That's typically what we send out stuff. There are a number of announcements also on there. I'm going to just go from the bottom right up. Is another thing that we do outside of this is called Holy City Life. And Alexandra, and I did see, there you are, and Meredith. I haven't seen Meredith. She? Okay. They both head up Holy City Life, which is an opportunity to get together and keep the friendships and the fellowship going outside of Theology on Tuesdays. And so I believe this Friday is the art walk downtown. The first Friday of the month, they do an art walk. So, yeah, that deserves a round of applause, I think. That's good. Yay, art. We are very pro-art here. We didn't do any of the drawings, actually. Was anybody here when the Marilyn Monroe was actually... Yeah, there were all sorts of interesting photos.
Marilyn Monroe in a flag bikini holding a pistol.
Smoking pistol.
Yes.
That's right.
Right behind my gut.
Yeah. That was how we started this 3 years ago.
Yes.
It's like, all right, I think people might have come for that. Anyways, so there's that this Friday, and you can join the group me just to stay in the know on all of those activities outside of this time. There's also a couple things that are really important. Any medical, dental students whatsoever, I know we have a few kind of in the orbit. There's a really important event through the Christian Medical Dental Association, which actually one of the folks here helped start that a couple years ago. And there's an event called Thrive 24. It's on October 5th, which is just a couple days from now. And you can get some more details about that, but if you're looking to integrate, which is such an important thing, your faith with medical practice. This is a free event. There's a way to build friendships of multi-generations, but in the medical field in particular. So that's something we want to try to promote and get you involved in if that relates to you either in the dental or medical fields. So you can scan that top QR code. There's also an opportunity, we do this once a month, we're both priests at St. Philip's Church, and if you're looking for a way, especially after all of this, the impact of Hurricane Helene and the damage that's there, I think a lot of people are looking for ways to serve, and I've talked to a few people already who are actually like going up and taking stuff, so we're happy to talk about that. We want this to be a place where you can come, but also serve too as well outside of this time. So to that end, we also do things called Saturday Serves, and the next one that we're doing is going to be October 12th through Hope to Home Ministries, which is going to be awesome. You can scan the middle QR code there and be in the know on what all is going there, but Hope to Home Ministries is a great ministry where they really do some incredible work, and this is going to be a great opportunity. If you want to join that, you can register. So.
Cool.
Tonight we are talking, as I said, more on friendship, and we're going to be looking specifically at what C.S. Lewis talked about in terms of friendship. She's laughing because I needed to give that to her. Smooth transition.
Yeah,
all right, so
no one noticed that you got up.
Yeah, yeah. C.S. Lewis and his both his writings and his example were really profound in my life for what it means to be a friend and what it means to have friends. There's so much to say on this, so we've devoted a whole night to talking about C.S. Lewis only on friendship. And it's really, you can glean a lot of insights in a lot of his works that aren't devoted. I mean, The Four Loves is one of the places my mind immediately goes to. You heard The Four Loves, his book, The Four Loves, anyone? A couple. So what is The Four Loves?
So, The Four Loves is one of Lewis's latest books that he wrote a couple of years before he died, but it's a really important book because it is a theological treatment of four different types of love that he takes from the Greek words. And in English, they're all just the word love, but he tries to nuance them. And so there is philia, which is brotherly love. There is agape. There is eros. And there is storge. But he spends a particularly long time on the philia, brotherly love, friendship side, because one of the things the New Testament talks about a lot, because Jesus talks about it a lot, is friendship. And Lewis felt that that was neglected theologically, and the Christians didn't pay enough attention to friendship and learning what it means to love as a friend, and understanding friendship really is one of the most important loves. So he did that treatment there, but he also, in a lot of his other works, friendship is really important. The Chronicles of Narnia, the examples of friendship are really important, and there he talks about friendship in a lot of the other books that he writes as well. Some really good stuff in The Problem of Pain about friendships, and just a lot of different places. But the other thing that's so important about Lewis is that he really lived out the importance of friendship, and I think there's a lot that can be gleaned from the way that he lived his life that can be really instructive for us today.
Yeah, so I'm excited to talk about both of those. And I was thinking maybe we could begin with his writing. Mm-hmm. And you gave me a number of quotes that most of them I've heard, but there's so many good ones. Do you have a favorite?
I think my favorite one, which I'm going to butcher, but we could actually read it.
You could read it.
I'll try butchering it first. But and I think we might have touched on this last time, but Lewis talks about the idea that friendship is born at that moment when the thing, the longing inside of you, the interest, the passion inside of you that you had thought was your own unique burden or treasure that no one else would ever understand, that you, when you are talking with someone else, you discover that that person shares exactly that same thing, and you have this moment where you say, what, you two? I thought I was the only one. And then you, with that other person, because of that thing that you have in common, which he elsewhere says, loving the same truth, that that binds you together in a way that makes for really deep friendship. And that's contrasted in where he elsewhere talks about clubbableness, which is not a word we would ever use in the United States. But he's talking about sort of the British tradition of men's clubs, which if you watch movies, you've probably seen where they're always like these old guys in the library sleeping behind the newspaper. And that people think, oh, hanging out in the room with these people means we're friends. And Lewis is like, no, 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 no. That is not friendship. Friendship is intentional, and it is about something. It's not just proximity.
Yeah, it's actually the same quote about clubbableness or companionship, right? And he says companionship or clubbableness, that's a fun word to say.
It is.
Is the matrix for friendship. So he's not trying to denigrate in any way the good of companionship, but he's like, let's just be very clear, this is not what he means by friendship. Which one of those four loves is that word?
Philia.
Philia, okay, that makes sense. Oh, Philadelphia, there you go.
Yep.
I think that's really important because we're in an age where companionship is just, like Lewis's day, people were thinking, well, yeah, I have lots of friends, but they're acquaintances, they're companions, maybe a step above acquaintances, I don't know. What else about what C.S. Lewis said is instructive for friendship? I love what, I mean, you just shared one about the idea of, it's not something in our day where it's the pressure of just wanting to have a friend, right?
Right.
We didn't have the quote, but there's one where he calls them pathetic people who are so, Lewis says in his writing, he makes you laugh, I think.
Yeah.
But he calls the people pathetic who are just so desperate for a friend that they are all about the relationship. And when he's contrasting that is, true friendship is born when they're shoulder to shoulder looking at something else, going after a mutual goal or
yes.
finding something there.
Yes.
I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, I think that is so true. And one of the things that Lewis says is that we, as a culture, tend to not really appreciate the value of friendship and the joy that friendship can bring, and that we look instead way too much to romantic relationships, whereas, particularly as Christians, friendship and that shared deep fellowship where the truth that we're looking at together is the gospel, that enables the possibility of this really deep bondedness where you walk through life together. And Lewis says that friendship is not something that is necessary for life, but he says it is one of the things that makes life worth living. And part of the reason that he could say that is that he really practiced what he preached. And one of the remarkable things about him, we have a bunch of books up here that are really good, but this one is called No Ordinary People. And it is a biography of 21 different friendships that Lewis had. And they are so interesting because they are friendships with, you can't really see these pictures, but there's an elderly nun in the top corner. There is an undergraduate at Oxford in the bottom corner, and sort of everything in between. And so Lewis was friends with all of these different kinds of people, different ages, because when he engaged and felt that spark of common interest or common passion or seeing the same truth with someone, he jumped in with both feet. And I think that's something that in our culture today, we're so cautious about everything. I just do have to tell one quick story about the nun here. When my daughter was in her senior year of high school, she had to join a Facebook group. This is how people used to find college roommates. Hopefully they've moved beyond that now. But the Facebook group of freshmen. And she had just been in the Porter Dowd School Musical playing the Mother Superior in Sound of Music. And so she hadn't really thought about what was on her Facebook profile. So she joined the group and no one responded. And she was crushed. And then I looked at her face and I was like, Mary Hollis, you're in a nun's habit. And so she changed the picture to her in a lily dress and it was like, ping, 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 ping. So apropos of nothing. But Lewis was friends even with the nun, so.
Well, actually, so, I mean, that's one of the things that struck me about Lewis was that he had this captivation with the ordinary people, anybody that he saw. And that was one of the quotes you sent along, which was, he says, it's a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you talk to may one day be a creature which, if you saw it now, you'd be so strongly tempted to either worship or else it would be a horror and a corruption such as you now meet, if at all, only in a nightmare. All day long, we are in some degree helping one another to one or the other of these destinations. And so he saw people for what they really are, which according to the Bible is incredibly dignified. He starts talking about possible gods and goddesses there, but we just read Psalm 8 this morning, actually, about how God made human beings just a little bit lower than the angels, but gave them dignity over all creation. And you see this something about being made in the image of God. I think you see something about God in the face of other people and in the soul of other people too, right? And so Lewis was all about, even in the ordinary, the most dull people, he was intentional in seeing that in others. And it led him, I think, to jump in with both feet in that sort of way.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because Lewis was so fascinated by this idea that each person was made in the image of God and had unique gifts and interesting things about them. He was always wanting to ask people questions and to learn more about who they were. We're going to talk more about asking good questions at a future one of these in 2 weeks or 4 weeks, whenever that one is. Yeah. But that whole idea of being interested in other people, that's something that's so important in friendship. And one of the issues in our culture right now is that we have all of this narcissism pressing on us all the time that says, I am the most important person. And it's like that old country song, Want to Talk About Me. Want to talk about me. And that is not really a great basis for friendship. because there might maybe be somebody out there who just wants to sit there and listen to you talk about yourself, but probably not. And they're probably looking to get away if that's happening. So I think part of that is changing your attitude of beginning to see each person as God's unique creation, and then looking to figure out how do you see the image of God and what is beautiful in that person. And part of that means that you have to be in person with people. One of the things that is remarkable about Lewis, that is something he writes about, but also something that he practices, is he spent an enormous amount of time investing in his relationships with people. And all of us have heard that old stereotype of the professor in the ivory tower, you know, who's up there locked away with his books. And Lewis could have done that. I've been in Lewis's rooms at Oxford. This is one of the most beautiful places you could ever imagine. You look out the window and there's a giant garden full of a herd of deer. You look out the other one and there's this manicured flower garden. It would be so easy to just sit up there and read and think great thoughts. But that's not what he did. He was out and about, and he was inviting people constantly to come have dinner with him, to have a beer with him. He was going to these Inklings meetings, which was his group of really close friends, and investing an enormous number of hours each week in trying to build these friendships. And I'm not going to ask you to think about how many hours a week do you invest in friendships and how busy are you really. But think about Lewis being one of the most important professors at Oxford, one of the top universities in the world, teaching classes, preparing lectures, writing books, doing all of these different things, and yet spending multiple hours one morning with his friends, multiple hours in the evening, another day of the week, with his friends, spending a couple of hours one-on-one with Tolkien each week, spending one-on-one time. If you add it all up, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 hours a week that he is spending just with friends. Now, I don't know about you, but that is more than I'm doing.
Yeah. Was he married? I mean, that's a lot. I just feel terrible right now.
That was my goal.
Okay.
No, not really. He was married later in life, but even when he was not married, he had a lot of household responsibilities. He had a brother who lived with him who was an alcoholic who had to be tended to. He had the widowed mother of his comrade in war that he had taken care of in his own home. So he had a lot of stuff going on.
One of the things that we can absolutely say is his intentionality is admirable and inspiring about going out and really being intentional in his friendships. And that was sparked, as I said, as we were talking about a minute ago, about just the high dignity that he saw in other people. But he also had another insight we can learn from him, is he saw the role of what friendship was doing as a very high thing in and of itself. One of the quotes you gave me was this: in each of my friends, there's something that only some other friend can fully bring out. By myself, I'm not large enough to call the whole human man into activity, or the whole man into activity. I want other lights than my own to show all his facets. Hence, true friendship is the least jealous of loves. Two friends delight to be joined by a third, and three by a fourth, if only the newcomer is qualified to become a real friend. Then they can say, as the blessed souls say in Dante, here comes one who will augment our loves. For love is to divide, not to take away. But the part of that that stands out to me is that for Lewis, one of the things that he gets absolutely right is that in our lives, especially as Christians, one of the things God's doing in our lives is he doesn't just forgive us in Jesus Christ of our sins. He actually cleanses us and is making us into new creatures. Mm-hmm. And the way he does that is in and through ordinary people, in and through friendships.
Yes.
And Lewis really, I think, believed that and took that to heart. And that was part of why he was so intentional, was he believed that the work and the intentionality and the time that he was sacrificing to love well a friend was part of what God was doing in and through him, because each relationship, each friend, only that person can bring out that specific thing yes. in the other. And that is quite a motivation to try to step out there and to love a friend well.
Yeah. And one of the things that we've talked about a little bit is that the Book of Proverbs is a great instruction manual on friendship. And I think Lewis really took a lot of that to heart. And one of the things the Book of Proverbs says is you become your friends. And one of the things that was so amazing about Lewis was his deep humility, because he was a genius. But he would talk about what an honor and privilege it was for him to spend time with his friends, and he learned so much from them. And one of the things that he saw is that there were things in his friends that he didn't have in his own life, that he wanted to possess, virtues that they had that he didn't have. And he knew that by spending time with them and talking with them and building that relationship, that he would become more like that, and that they would help each other to grow more and more into the people that God made them to be. And his concept of friendship was, I guess to use a sort of fancy word, was generative. And there's this book called The Company They Keep, which I would highly recommend, that's about Lewis and Tolkien's friendship and how it was generative. And what I mean by that is that if they had never met each other, we would never have had The Lord of the Rings, we would never have had The Chronicles of Narnia. Part and parcel of their friendship was encouraging each other to use the gifts that God had given them and challenging each other to do that. And when you're alone, that just doesn't happen. And when they added others that were like-minded to their group, the output of this group called the Inklings, you can make a very good case, changed the course of the 20th century. Just because these people were friends, meeting in the pub and talking about real things. And that's another thing that is important in all of this, is that Lewis and his friends made a very intentional, conscientious effort that they were going to talk about things that mattered, that they were not going to, universities, in case you don't know this, especially among the faculty, are rife with gossip, more than most workplaces are even, and they made a very intentional decision, we are not going to talk about that. We are going to talk about what we're reading, we're going to encourage each other to read, we're going to talk about our faith, we're going to talk about philosophy, we're going to talk about all of these things, but we are not going to just focus on gossip or politics. Now, if you look at what conversations on social media are about, that is a pretty good example of all the things that Lewis and Tolkien and his friends would have said, we're just not going to talk about that.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that stood out to me about his personal habits and what he did, which are just as instructive, if not more, than what he wrote, which was profound. I mean, even in, like the Four Loves, all that stuff, but even in his fiction, like he's talking mm-hmm. about the line, the Wolf and the Wardrobe, for instance, like the fact that you have these four children, and they they're siblings, but they also become friends mm-hmm. with these animals. Mm-hmm. I think that's intentional, even in this yes. children's literature, to show that while on the one hand friendship is born, you have to have some shared, similar vision, right? That's true friendship, but there's also difference.
Yes,
and that's
and there's glory in that.
There's glory yeah. in that, yeah. and so. Different ages, different, I mean, in that story, they're different creatures, but it's
right.
a fictional
yeah.
thing. And so that's really important because it can be very different in your personhood and in your disposition and all of that, and yet have a similar vision in something, and that can be the roots of real deep friendship. But Lewis didn't just write about these things. His life was lived that way as well. And you talked about the Inklings. How many of them were there typically at the height of it?
At the height of it, there were close to 20.
And they started by just Lewis and Tolkien, right?
Yes.
And they were meeting doing what exactly?
So they were drinking beer in the morning.
Okay.
Sometimes they were drinking coffee or tea or cider, but they were drinking beer in the morning. And there's a great poem that Lewis wrote about one of the times he was talking with Tolkien, he said, Tolkien and I were basically up late talking about dragons. and that they had been in this pub, and that some guy in the pub overheard him and came up and said, "I seen him. I seen the dragons." And you know, and Lewis and Tolkien were like, "Yes." But yeah, one of the things that you see is they had this deep friendship, and they were talking about things that mattered deeply to both of them, and spurring each other on, and that they would welcome like-minded other people, which is how they grew from just having this relationship of two of them to this expanded group. And it was remarkable the way that that happened. But part of what was interesting is the way that they spent time together, because that also is very intentional. So you would see that they would spend time where they would bring things to read out loud to each other, which we think, well, that's really nerdy.
Yeah. Sorry, it's hard for me to envision. I've never been in an environment where that's happening.
Yes. Well, just wait. One of the things they did is they would bring texts, or sometimes ones that they had written, and they would read them and then talk about them. They would also do that with poetry. That's one of the most vulnerable things you can ever do. If you've written poetry and then you read it out loud to other people where they can laugh at it or tell you it was beautiful, whatever it might be, that's a very vulnerable thing to do. But they did those kinds of things. They also spent a lot of time doing walks together. That was one of the main places that would talk. They would go to the pub where they would have deep conversations about theology and literature and all sorts of things. But what they didn't do was to just go to the movies together. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know, sitting next to somebody while you're watching something for 3 hours is not going to deepen your relationship with them unless you go out afterwards and talk about what you just saw.
Yeah. The substance of their conversation was profoundly deeper than most of what ours today is like. One of the things, and just in hearing what you just shared, he had this balance of being one-on-one and in groups, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, and I was just trying to envision what this would be like as they're reading. I think Lewis and Tolkien bonded over, was it Icelandic literature?
Yes.
Is that right? And so they're
read in Icelandic.
So yes. There you go. You don't really, I mean, whatever there's somebody out there who has an interest like you, even if it's Icelandic literature.
Yes, and they were not afraid to put that out there and be thought of as being a little weird.
And actually that group, right, grew. And imagining like 20 men, and they'd start, this is what's amazing, they'd start at like, what, 9 or 9:30 at night, and there'd be a pot of tea, and then they'd bring their stuff. And what he's bringing is like the great works that we've read. I mean, Tolkien brought chapters by the week of The Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
And you think about what was produced in this group. How, I mean, practically speaking, for us who, I think it might be hard, how does that work? How do you keep it from getting out of control with, you know, either trying to stay on task or making it just too friendly, that sort of thing? Like, what would that time have looked like, and what can we learn from that?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that helped that time to take shape was that Lewis and Tolkien, the center of that group of people that assembled was not Lewis, it was not Tolkien, it was their friendship together. And so they had already developed kind of a pattern of the way that they would talk about things, and they invited other people into that. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things, there was actually veto power in the group. If anybody, I think you got 5 minutes automatically, and then if any one person thought, "I just can't take this anymore," they would veto. And there was a guy named Hugo in there that he didn't like Tolkien's elves and The Lord of the Rings. And he was reputed to have said, "Oh my goodness, not another effing elf," at an Inklings meeting, and vetoed and cut one of the, what ended up being one of the glorious chapters of The Lord of the Rings. The Inklings didn't get to hear it.
Oh, so they didn't get to hear it, but he kept it in the book.
He kept it anyway, yeah.
Take that, Hugo. that's awesome. Yeah, it's those things that, fill my imagination with what could we do if we had the vulnerability to bring the things that mattered to us, to invite people into it, to get their feedback, and yet do this I mean, I would love to have the energy to stay up till 3 in the morning and do that with folks, but I think there's something lovely about having a pint by a fire and doing these things that we love with people that we love and growing in that together.
Yes.
That is such a powerful picture of friendship.
Yeah, and they were very intentional about being in beautiful places.
Yeah.
So they were in places that were conducive to conversation. And one of the other things that is a great quotation from Lewis's writing in The Four Loves, he says, Eros, sexual love, is about naked bodies. And he said, philia, friendship, is about naked souls. And the idea that in friendship there is vulnerability and that you take off the mask and you are real with the people that you are with.
Yeah, and one, I forget what the quote was, but in that sense, it's more foundational than even Eros in marriage, right? Like he's talking about on your deathbed, that's the thing that we remember the most, is
yes.
the connection we have when our souls are laid bare with others and they're shaped profoundly and well to be what God made them to be. That's probably the most human thing about us that we long for.
Yes.
So, any other concluding thoughts before we go to the questions?
One of the things that Lewis also talks about in here is that if you are a Christian, one of the things that is really important to do is to lean into the friendships that you believe God has put in your life, the people that God has put in your life, and that leaning into those is really important because God brings different people into your life at different times to help shape you and to push you toward things that you would never have done just on your own. And he had multiple examples of that in his own life. Like Dorothy Sayers, who was a brilliant woman at Oxford, Lewis became really deep friends with. And because of her, the two of them went off on kind of this Dante binge of studying Dante's Divine Comedy. And that ended up with Lewis writing The Great Divorce. And he would never have written that book if he hadn't had that friendship with Dorothy Sayers. So he really believed strongly that it was not an accident when God brings people into your life and that you need to lean into that.
And just to brag on you, because I see this, you do that so well when people are, like myself, come and interrupt in the things in your life and you're like, really, there's other things, but you've inspired me to try to be more open to what's going on that God brings across my path in both minute by minute, but also zooming out and big picture and that sort of thing. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Abigail, how are we doing on questions?
We've got some questions. If y'all want to go ahead and take a time to like some questions, but I'll start with the first one. Did Lewis ever speak on how he made and fostered meaningful non-romantic friendships with the opposite gender?
That is a great question. I'm not sure that he ever spoke particularly on that, but I think that he very definitely practiced that. And he would see that as being exactly the same model that we talked about early on about someone who sees the same truth. And so, for example, the nun on the cover of the book was Sister Penelope. And Sister Penelope was a nun at the Abbey of Wantage, which was probably about 25 miles from Oxford. And she had written Lewis a letter after he had written the book Out of the Silent Planet. And she had commented about some things that not everybody had picked up in the book. And Lewis was really moved that she had picked up on what he was really about. So he wrote her back. And this is one of the things that's sad today is we don't write letters anymore. But that was kind of the foundation of their relationship, was exchanging those letters. And then when they realized they were only 30 miles apart, Lewis would go and visit her. And he actually, I think it was the Four Loves that he dedicated to her and the nuns of that community, which there also is a funny story about that, because when they translated it, I think it was into Italian, the translator didn't really understand the word Wantage, which was the town. And they instead thought it was the word wanton. I don't know if you know the word wanton, W-A-N-T-O-N, immoral, loose women. And so they translated, instead of to the nuns at Wantage, it was to some wanton women. But Lewis was also really good friends with Dorothy Sayers. But again, they came together over the subject matter, and they were both on the committee for something called the Canterbury Festival. And they worked on putting that together and coming up with these theological works. But I think the basic idea is that they were together, they were in circumstances where they had some thing that they had in common that they were both interested in. They were meeting in public places. You know, Lewis was not having women up in his rooms or anything like that. But they were, Lewis was very forthright, and this was pretty progressive for the 1940s and 50s, that women were absolutely his intellectual equal, and that he could learn from these women. So it was a relationship of equals, and so I think that provided a level of comfort that helped the friendships to be able to grow.
Yeah, that's really important. I mean, we've talked about this before. The if friendship being what it is, as something that can sometimes be derailed by the baser desires of Eros or that sort of thing, the wisdom, right, that Lewis displayed of not being in environments where it would be really scandalous for something like that, but also just knowing your own self, right? And I think for wisdom that we can glean from Lewis on how to do friendships well, which I think the first thing is that they're essential to have true friendships with people of the opposite sex, but also knowing our own and being honest about our own heart's desire. Sometimes it's helpful to be explicit and name that with the person. Sometimes if you have really, I mean, just being careful about the context that you're meeting, the time, the place, that sort of thing, and the purpose of what you're doing, right? Just being careful. I think that's one of the things learning about our own, we can often fall prey to the things that we don't want to do, we actually end up doing. It's a good question.
Finding the right balance of taking care of your spiritual, physical, mental health, your work/school, and your friendships, how to prioritize?
That is a great question. I'm very opinionated about that, so Justin may have to temper me here. But I would say absolutely taking care of your spiritual life, obviously, is the most important, and you need time alone for prayer and time in the Word of God. But I also think that part of keeping your spiritual life strong is investing deeply in friendship. I think we very often as Christians, particularly in the United States, get a lone ranger mentality that we think it's kind of me and Jesus against the world. And that is not what you see in the New Testament. It is a company of people who are called together, walking with Jesus together. So I think that all of the rest of those priorities are behind walking with people in deep friendship, because I think you will do all the rest of life better if you are walking in deep friendship with people.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I'm tempering you off of that. Your spiritual life with the Lord is the first thing. I think if you are married, if you do have children, I mean, this is where I felt so guilty before, is there are seasons of life, and you've attested to this before, that you just have less time.
Yeah.
Work is something that I think we have just to name what is our tendency. It's probably to overwork, perhaps. Maybe it's just be lazy and not work at all. But I think by and large, we as a generation here in America today are looking to get more out of work than really what it was meant to do. And so we are seeking to get like existential meaning and value. And there's not to say that like our work can have meaning and value, but that is not even, like, that's way below the relationships that we're meant to have, I think, in terms of what that's supposed to provide. So I think one of the things I was thinking as you were talking is like, we're starved for real, genuine friendships here. And yet we are working longer hours and doing more with our vocation, and that proportion is so out of balance.
Out of whack.
That we actually, I'm wondering if we just, and this is, it sounds, I don't want to, but like if work, we were like, all right, I'm just going to do this job, but I'm really going to go deep in my friendships and in the substantive way that we're talking about tonight, that might provide the sort of balance and the meaning that people are looking for and they're starved for because they're looking for it in a job or something like that.
And I think the other aspect of this that's important is planning your time, which we're not very good at in our culture now because we've got cell phones that enable us to be instantaneous in what we're doing. But if you block time in advance to spend with friends and make that a priority, instead of thinking I'll spend time with friends when I have time available, if you wait until you have time available, you will never have time available. But if you block that time, even if it's at the end of the day when you're really tired and you'd like to go home and binge watch Netflix, if you've made an appointment to go meet your friend instead, you will do that and then you will be glad that you did it.
So what would you say, like, if somebody was like, well, I have like 10 or 12 friends, maybe they're genuine friends, and I just don't have the time that I want to really cultivate all of those, is it better to focus trying to meet with each one of them and stay connected? Or if you had the time to really go deep with, say, three of them, what would you say to that?
I would say go deep with three
and then spend
occasional time with the others. Yeah.
Even though you care about all of them. I think that's one of the things, recognizing your limits and
friendships
too is important. Yeah, I thought that's what you'd say.
As a young person, how would you recommend creating generational friendships?
That is a great question also. As an old person, I will say that I have the great privilege of a lot of times a younger person will come to me and say, I would love to spend more time with you. I would love for you to be a mentor or to be a friend. Would you be willing to do that? That is something that's very hard to say no to. Every occasionally I do have to say no to it because I just can't. But most of the time there's a way to make that work and to define what that looks like. So I think part of it, if you are the younger person, is to pray about who are the people that I see around me that I feel like are people that God has put in front of me that I could learn from and that there would be joy in building a relationship there. And then just be vulnerable and go and ask them. And that's true for couples as well, not just with individuals, that there may be, you know, if you're trying to get wisdom about what does a healthy marriage look like, even if you're a single person and not dating anyone, seeing people who are older, who have good marriages, saying, I would love to spend some time with y'all just to learn from you. People are not gonna say no to that. But I think it involves taking the initiative and praying that God would show you who those people are.
Yeah, that's really good. Some of the advice, I've shared this before, that I remember being in college and an older, although he wasn't old at the time, mentor of mine was like, find folks that you want to be like and just start showing up around them, just being there. And that's easier, I think, for the younger person to do in some ways. You think about other ways in, right? That takes a lot of vulnerability just to like show up. But some of the things, as you just talked about, like I remember being 20 years old, not being terrified of little kids, like, but they had like a bunch of them, and this guy and his wife, they had four young kids, and they would invite me to their home for dinner. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is amazing, and I'll try to help out. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'll help out around the house. And they were very kind and patient with me in that. But it was amazing because it gave me a vision for what I wanted out of marriage down the line.
Yeah.
And that was really good. I think also when you think about where you are, I mean, it was like the Christian medical and dental thing that we announced at the beginning. It's like finding folks in your field of work that are in the faith that you want to kind of live out. But also, you know, one of the things about, I guess, the last like 30, 40 years is the turnover rate in the workplace is at an all-time high and changing jobs. And one of the things that was very normal for most of human civilization was that you had very organic relationships with generations above you because they taught you a trade. They taught you these various things. And there's by and large an absence of that.
Yes,
today.
You have to seek it.
So you have to seek it out. But that's a very easy thing when it comes to your vocation and your work, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's a natural way in. But also just, you know, I have questions about life or about this, and just naming that, and would you be willing to grab coffee? Like, those are the sort of things. So it's good.
Okay, this is a little bit of a curveball question. If Israel starts World War III, should we support them?
That's why I love theology.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that there is nothing in Scripture that says you must always support one nation versus another nation. I would also say that there are different theological viewpoints that are held among Christians who are seeking to be faithful to what the Scriptures teach about the current state nation of Israel. And some people see that as God's anointed nation based on their understanding of Scripture. Other people do not see it that way. But I also think that there, I don't want to go off on a deep dive into Augustinian theology right here, but there's a really well thought out theory of war that's called just war theory that derives from the writings of St. Augustine that I think is very helpful. But I would say that in terms of the idea of Israel can do no wrong, that is not a theologically tenable position.
You put that really well about the differences Christians have. I personally find myself on the latter group that you mentioned of basically the New Testament is, Jesus is true in the fulfillment of Israel. He's the true Israel.
Right.
And so the church is now comprised of all tribes, tongues, and nations, all people groups. It's not just one, like the nation of Israel. And so that specific nation was for a time thousands of years ago, I guess, I think. I think just war theory could be a whole theology on tap in and of itself. But I think one of the things that we should strive for is also like the peace of the world, and we pray for that. And sometimes there are good reasons to go to war, and that's something that I think can also be defended from the Scripture. So it just takes wisdom.
How to balance time pouring into friendships versus your spouse or partner?
That is a great question. So both of those are really important. One of the things that is perhaps counterintuitive, I think, is that one of the best things that you can do to strengthen your marriage is to have good friendships outside your marriage. Because I think that when you don't do that, when you don't have good friendships outside your marriage, you tend to overload your emotional dependence on your spouse, which isn't good on any level. Whereas if, on the other hand, you have strong friendships that are encouraging you in your walk with the Lord, that are helping you grow in various Christian virtues, the fruit of the Spirit, and all those kinds of things, you bring that back into your marriage, and it causes great fruit to come from that. But I think that it is important to strike a balance. Obviously, you don't want to be out with your friends every night and never see your spouse. That would be crazy. But I think also it involves planning, again, which is something we don't always like to do. So one of the things my wife and I do is we try to, usually on Sundays, talk about what's happening during the next week. And so like last week, or maybe it was the week before, she was going with some of her friends to a Christian concert where she was going to be out all evening. So I knew that was a great time for me to organize doing something with some of my friends. And so I think if you plan, you can find a way that it makes it work really well.
Being intentional and communicating about where we're going to be, that's the hardest part I find when there's just so many demands of little kids and you're both working and trying to figure it out. It's just a lot. And communication is often the reason I end up not spending enough time with friends that I want to. But also, and we talked about this last week, true friendship with Vaughn Roberts. I think this is a really helpful principle. He says, a single man has told me that he and his married friend work on the principle that a good friendship strengthens a marriage while a bad one weakens it. They aim to arrange their friendship in such a way that the wife is grateful rather than resentful for any time he spends with his friend. He comes back a better husband and father. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important.
I think that's so true.
So I think that's a helpful principle.
How do you handle friends who make everything political? This feels like a massive barrier today due to how polarized the country has become.
We never had that question.
No, but it's such a good question. I think one of the things, I could give a whole sermon on this, but I will not. I will restrain myself. But I think one of the issues that we have in our culture right now is that we have over-politicized everything. And the idea, even 50 years ago, that supporting different political candidates would mean that you couldn't be friends with people, no one would have understood that 50 years ago because it just wasn't a thing. But now that is very much a thing. And part of the reason for that is that we put far too much emphasis on politics as a way of saving the world. It is really sort of to the point that we think that Jesus is not the savior of the world, it's whoever's going to come in on Air Force One. And that is, I think, just a profoundly wrong paradigm. I think one of the things that you can do if you have a friend where you have serious political disagreements is to just say, you know what, I love you, I am so glad we're friends, we're going to agree to disagree about politics, and we're not really going to talk about that, and we are going to move on and focus our friendship around other things.
I think a good friendship is willing to talk about politics. The danger that we're in, as you said, is we're such a polarized society, society that it's so easy to get into that. And so I'd say a couple things about that. It's never a bad idea just to have some disarming honesty with friends. If they're truly your friends, when you say, listen, if you have different political views, which is, I'm guessing, behind this, because maybe even if you had the same views, you still might feel this way. But just to be honest and say, I really am more interested about other things than just talking about politics. I think there's a place for that, but I'd love to talk about what's going on in your life, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. the best way to go about it, is just bring it. Be relentless in trying to bring it back down to everyday life. Yes. What's going on in your life, what you're actually doing, what you're actually feeling, and not about all the stuff that's out there, if that's this sort of pattern. Mm-hmm. And also if you're doing those sort of things and it perpetuates, it is okay to walk away from friendship sometimes. Like, I think that's one of the things, if you're repeated in doing this and it's just constantly going to politics, and you're upfront, and you give them an opportunity to say, like, I don't want this to be about that. It's okay to try to go spend your time elsewhere. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
What should I do if I'm investing in my friendships but not receiving anything in return?
Persevere.
That is also a great question. I think that is also, if you find yourself in that situation, one of the things that is important to do, I think, is to engage in some prayerful self-reflection and to think about, why is it that I don't feel that I'm receiving anything in return? And that could be, not necessarily, but it could be that you are approaching the relationship with the idea of, I need to get things from this relationship, rather than from the idea that I want to give myself in this relationship and be an encouragement. Sometimes you can get into relationships that are very dysfunctional, where someone, for whatever reason, is not in a position to give and just takes all the time, and that can develop into codependency, which is really unhealthy. So sometimes asking somebody who's not in that relationship, but who knows both of you, to give you some wisdom about that can be helpful. But I do think some prayerful self-reflection in that is important as well.
And that's a really good point. I think that gosh, and the times in my friendships and relationships where it does feel very one-sided, it's been helpful, and oftentimes it's gone both, it has gone both ways in this, where I have received far more initiative from other people, friends that are trying to call or text and be intentional, and I've dropped the ball. Or there's times where it is like, I feel like I'm the one doing that. And true friends, one of the Proverbs, I was talking to somebody earlier about this, faithful are the wounds of a friend. A friend is somebody who's willing to actually speak the truth, not swinging like a hammer at you, but using a scalpel to use the truth. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about that last week. Like, you're willing to say something hard about the relationship, maybe, where it's like, this feels really one-sided. I'd like it to be more, and to have the courage to do that is not easy. But I think having the courage to name that truth and to speak honestly with folks is really important.
Yep.
Maybe, yeah, one more? How about that?
How to be friends with people in your life who have different values. Is that even possible?
Yes.
Yes. I would say it is more than possible. I would say it is important. And I think that one of the things that you do in those types of situations is you don't focus all the time on the things that you have that are different. You focus on the things that you have in common. And then you can be honest, hopefully, again, going back to what you're just saying, speaking the truth in love, of saying, you know, I don't see this thing from the same perspective that you do. Tell me more about why you feel that way. And try to listen without judging the person or responding in any way. Just listen to try to understand. And I think that doesn't mean you're going to end up agreeing, but you may be able to understand why that person is coming from where they're coming from. And part of the thing that we are called to as Christians is to love people, even people that are our enemies. And so when we surround ourselves in kind of an echo chamber, that's not helpful.
Yeah. It's really a blessing to be able to get to know somebody, why they believe something dramatically different than you can do great good for your own soul. So I think that's, on the one hand, just going out after folks who are dramatically different mm-hmm. than you and being able to the relational capital that it takes to be able to speak what you just talked about, or even the last question about trying to speak the truth. It's like you need to do 9 like instances first of sacrificing yourself, leaning in, asking good questions, right? Always
right.
If
and
you're
building trust,
right? If you're in question, ask a question. Basically, if you're in doubt, ask a good question of somebody else before offering your perspective. But it does take trust. It does take the knowledge that this other person has, that like, this person truly cares about me. I've seen it in action. Mm-hmm. And so they're willing to be trusted. And I think when you are able to build that kind of relationship, then you have the ability to lean in and say kindly the truth that needs to be said.
Yeah.
So. Well, guys, this has been great. We're excited. A couple more weeks. Next 2 weeks from now, we'll be back in here. But feel free to stick around. We've got some books up here. Feel free to peruse those, and we'll chat for a while. So thanks for coming out.
Thanks for coming.